how long were you in Dallas? That's where we're talking about that off the top.
2 years. 2 years. So I played with Jamie Benn and when he was just coming out of his shell. And I recognize, you could recognize as a teammate, you knew he was going to be great. I remember coming back the summer before he won all the awards and the scoring title and telling guys, listen, this guy, he's good for your hockey pool next year. He's going to break out here real soon. Just a tremendous talent, tough kid, respectful kid, just going to be a team captain right from the get-go.
So be honest about Dallas, because you know the market. You played there a couple years, Razor. Are they, waking up today, are they more angry still about the Cowboys' loss to the Rams on Sunday night than they are excited about the trip to the Stanley Cup? Like, where would this all fit in at this point?
Yeah, unfortunately, between the bubble and the timing, this isn't great. It's not, Dallas won't be a great hockey market. But that's unfortunate, because if they had people in the stands and they were going out to play game one on May 29th, the city, the place would be rocking and rolling, because Dallas loves a winner, obviously. Big Texas, the whole idea of the lights and everyone watching them, they would put a great show on in a Stanley Cup final. It would be a great place for all the reporters, for the media, everyone to be out there, because it would be a lot of fun and there would be a lot of energy. But with the Cowboys starting up this week and laying an egg in Los Angeles, it's certainly the Dallas Cowboys talk radio show morning right now.
Analytics was a big conversation last night. I feel like a lot of people were talking about, while Vegas controlled every single analytics in that game, where do you stand with that in the NHL right now?
I understand it. I think analytics tells some of the story, but I think we continually see that, just that statement last night, Vegas controlled that enough, but they're the ones going home. So does it matter, right? That's the easy one to go to. But I do believe there's value in it. I just, to get completely stuck on it, hockey is a game of intangibles, and I understand we can equate those intangibles a little bit more than we have before, but at the end of the day, there's just some things that happen out on the ice, that happen during games, happen during seasons, that some guys that might not be analytical can swing things for you as a team. I will go to how we look at goaltenders and how we rate goaltenders. Analytics is going to be a big thing with that. It's not just shots on goal and save percentage and goals against anymore. And I think that's the best thing from analytics, is we're going to recognize guys who aren't maybe on great teams, guys that are on better teams that we've considered better goaltenders. We can actually see now these shots against, the chances that they're actually getting, and getting a fair read on what these goaltenders and how they're playing.
So what are the specific analytics then, or peripheral stats or heat maps, whatever you want to describe them as? There's a variety of different things that you look at, Razor. What in terms of judging current day goaltenders?
Certainly, it's the big one is, okay, so being able to go through and, all right, a breakaway, the goal differential, right? The expected goals against, and a breakaway is 1.3, a rebound shot's 1.1, a shot from center ice is 0.1. So to go through an entire game and marking those chances against, those shots against a different goaltender, spits out the expected goals against. If it's a 3.5 and your goaltender gave up two goals, he played a great game. If your expected goals against, if he had 20 shots from center ice or 40 shots from center ice, gave up five goals on 40 shots, then his expected goals against is probably about a 2.1 and he gave up five goals. That's no bueno. So that's what I'm looking at on a nightly basis, is a few companies doing it, and it's going to get easier to do in real time coming soon. And when you get to that, we'll be able to go right after a game, after analyzing and watching a game, saying, yeah, this guy didn't play great, but his goals, expected goals against, was actually this. He might have looked ugly. He gave up that one bad goal, but the reality is he made four breakaway saves, and his expected goals against was six. but he actually only gave up four. It wasn't as bad as we thought.
Andrew Raycroft is our guest, Nesson analyst, former Leafs goaltender. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ziggy, chime in on this as well. I'll throw it to you first, Razor. I was interested in Vegas head coach Pete DeBoer's comments after the game last night when he said that the struggles they had, and they ended up winning the series, but the struggles they had with Thatcher Demko in the Vancouver series may have had a hangover effect in their series with Dallas. Do you buy that? Is that possible?
I've never heard that before. I'm a little surprised at that. I think you could, I mean, I'm impressed that I guess he's giving Thatcher Demko the credit, but maybe it was your shooters and your guys not being able to score. I thought of that halfway, you know, Thatcher Demko was amazing. He was absolutely fantastic and three of the best playoff games anybody's ever seen back to back to back. But then you come into this series and Dallas still can't score and they still can't ramp up and they're taking a bunch of shots and nothing's going in. Now it starts to reflect on the Vegas Golden Knights roster a little bit more than it does the actual goaltender, in my opinion. That's what I saw.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it, from one series to the next, if your guys are having trouble scoring, I think it can get in some of your top guys' heads where it's a momentum game. Most players, most teams rely on that momentum. And Sky, we talk about this a lot, and the best players in the game don't let it affect them as much. And it'll take a lot to move me off that thought. And I don't know if, Scott, you want to dig into that more, but I'm just, yeah, I think it, from one series to the next, I think it can affect some of your players. Absolutely.
So you're saying then that there's a persistence that the great players have, that if the puck's not going in, but Sidney Crosby's still going to cycle on the
finds
back
a way.
Wall, finds a
That's
way.
The hard part in the playoffs is that you never know when you're going to get called upon, right? I mean, you never know when your turn's going to be up. You might have that one chance that will change a game. And Razor, I mean, you've seen guys, you've played with guys that have really, you know, are those difference makers where it's that one play, right, where things change and everything they do is they don't really rely on that momentum. It's just they're game breakers and they find a way to get it done with just that one chance.
Yeah, the best players are the best players because of their ability to just strive for perfection without ever getting there on a nightly basis. They want to be the best. They can go and do it, and they don't. But the next game, they don't get down because they didn't get there. They just roll it right back out, and they just have the ability to be better than everybody else on a, like you said, the consistent basis. That momentum, it doesn't affect them. They don't think about it. They just expect every night to go out and make a difference. And if you think like that every game, it might not happen, but if you don't get down about it, then it happens more often than not. And the other point is when guys like this Finnish kid are stepping up in game sevens and in deciding games for you and scoring big goals as a team, that lifts everybody up really quickly.
Andrew Raycroft, our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Kevin Bieksa going to jump on in just a second. Razor, I mean, almost everybody who's played, it feels like in the last 30 years, has had some kind of contact with Rick Bowness. Did you ever play for him? Do you know him at all? He's obviously got history in Boston if you go way back.
I played with him with Kevin, with Juice in Vancouver.
There you go.
Teammate yep. on high, so yeah, the two of us played together in Van City. And the two of us spent a lot of time with Rick Bowness that year, being a goaltender and Bones running the penalty kill and running the D. So he was everything what everybody said. I've said it for the last 10 years since I played for him and with him that organization, Alain Vion, Rick Bowness, they were the two best coaches, most fun I had. Rick was just, he's turned into an amazing, you know, he's always been a great head coach, but as an assistant coach, his energy, his motivation, his ability to connect with players, to come in every morning and talk and just ask how everybody's doing. He had the respect of everyone. So, yeah, I am very happy for him. Like everybody said, it's going to be nothing different than what everybody's saying about the guy and how, if anyone deserves a Stanley Cup, it's certainly him.
All right. Well, Kevin Bieksa is jumping in on the conversation. Razor, we're going to keep you. So it'll be the four of us here for the next 5-10 minutes or so. You can get your, you can introduce him if you want to.
This guy needs no introduction, folks.
Kevin, it's good to bring you into the conversation. We were just asking Razor about Rick Bowness, and obviously you played for him when he was an assistant coach in Vancouver. You must be thrilled for him.
I am. And, you know, I'm also thrilled to have Razor on the call. We haven't talked in a while, so
I know.
Good to connect again, buddy. Long time no talk.
You got it. I know.
No, he said everything about Rick Bowness, and I've talked about him a lot in the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. I'm sure they're sick of it, but he meant that much to me as a coach and played for a long time, like Razor, and you have a lot of coaches, and there's just some that you just connect with, and I'm sure a lot of people can say the same thing. Like, you heard earlier in the playoffs when they asked Victor Hedman about Rick Bowness, and he's like, I don't think you have enough time for me to explain how much he's meant to me. There's a lot of people that can say that. He's just, you know, there's good cop and bad cop with coaches, and he was always good cop. And when he was bad cop, you respected him and you listened to him because you had that relationship with him where you trusted him. So a lot of people that are happy that he's going to the finals again.
Well, just anybody can jump in on this. Ziggy, I want your feedback too. The old notion of good cop, assistant coach, bad cop, head coach, that's probably too determinative. Like, I would imagine that different guys play different roles at different times, but I'm trying to get into Rick Bowness's shoes. It's been a long time since he was a head coach, bounced around the league a lot as a popular assistant coach. He seems well suited, obviously. His team is succeeding for the head coaching role as well. I wonder what the balance is there in terms of someone's personality, head coach versus being an assistant coach. Razor, jump in, and then we'll go around the table.
Well, I think the players nowadays, we know they're younger. We know they don't necessarily respond to the bag skates and the screaming and the yelling. It's just a different generation of players we have now, and I think Rick is perfect for that. I understand he's a little bit older. He might be a little further away from the music the guys listen to, but he's very, like Kevin just said, Juice, I'm going to call you Juice. Like Juice just said, he has the respect of all of the guys. You see right away he cares about you as a person. He cares about you as a player. And if he does yell at you, he's going to get your attention. If he is upset with something that you're doing, he's going to get your attention because you know that's coming from a place of caring. And he wants you to succeed. That was the feeling I always got from Rick as a coach, and I'm sure that's what's resonating with the players and all the guys that he has coached over the years.
Yeah. I went out for drinks once in the summer with a head coach that I was playing for at the time. We were at a funeral, actually. And he told me, listen, he's like, I remember saying to him, wow, like you're such a good guy, like in the summer, like what happens during the season? Kind of joking around. And he says, listen, I feel like during the season, like there just has to be a barrier between me and the players, or I feel like they won't respect me or listen to my message. So this was a long time ago, right? This was probably like 12, 13 years ago. Well, it's so much different now today. And players, I think, want to have a head coach or an assistant coach that they can actually communicate with and say, like Berkey always says this, like it used to be like, do this. And people would be like, okay. And now it's like, do this. And the player's like, okay, well, why? And you have to explain, like, why you got to do this and then what the next step is and everything. It's just the way the world is now. It's just the way these kids grow up is they have things explained to them and they need that dialogue. They need that communication. So that head coach that just sits back behind the bench and dictates and you can't say anything back to them, that's gone now. Like, people aren't responding. Players aren't responding to that type of coach. And I think that's why, like, Rick has been an assistant for, I think, 25 years since his last head coaching job. I can't remember when Phoenix was. I know it was a long time ago. but he has those skills because he's been an assistant, and the assistant coaches historically are the communicators. They're the ones that go around and sit in the dressing room and show guys videos and actually have these interactions. So that's where the bond is built, and that's where the respect is built. So I think that's why you're seeing him jump into a head coaching job now and have success. And you hear like Oleksiak and all these guys talk about him. They just rave about him because they all have their individual relationships with him where they trust him. And they trust that, like Razor says, he cares about them, right?
Yeah, I think it's tough to have your assistant coaches move to the head coaching position. We've seen it a lot this year, and guys have been successful, but it's a tough transition. We're going to have to pivot here. Elliot Friedman just tweeting that Peter Laviolette's going to be the next head coach of the Washington Capitals.
He's hearing it. Yeah, So it's not a formal report.
Well, it's pretty much done if he's
saying it. Obviously. But he wants to be clear he's hearing it. Yeah, so we want to get the terminology right.
Sorry, hearing it. He's tweeting it, not hearing it.
Yeah. We're reading it with our eyeballs off of Twitter. We're reading what he's hearing. Razor and Kevin Bieksa with us. Let's go around the table. Zig, start with you, and then Kevin and Razor. Thoughts on Laviolette to Washington?
Great. I played for him. Great guy. He's obviously changed a lot since when I played with him back 15 years ago, but very detailed guy, strict with his systems. He's on you, and he squeezes everything out of you and a little bit more, and that's what makes him such a good coach and can rub some players the wrong way, but at the end of the day, he's one of the best. I didn't like Babcock in that position, but I do think Lavi will do well.
Kevin.
Is there a harder coaching job than the Washington Capitals? I understand the potential there, and they won the Stanley Cup a few years ago, but it just seems like that's such a tough group to wrangle in. And I think Trotz did a great job, and he's another guy who's detail-oriented and, communicates with his players, but feel like Laviolette kind of rules with an iron fist a little bit more. Like, he's going to try to – you got to think of, ownership and the GM. Like, why do they feel like they need a coach like this? Well, it's because their group. I think it's a tough group to bring in. Like, sometimes they tend to kind of drift, I think, and you have to get these guys focused and you have to get these guys playing the right way, and that seems like it's easier said than done, so – he seems like a guy who they want to come in and bring a little bit more structure to a team that likes to kind of, do their own thing at times. I'm trying to say this gently, guys. You know what I'm saying, though, right?
Take it
loud and clear.
Nobody wants to go around the river with me here. Like,
well, Brian McClellan said it at the end of the season, right? I mean, got to be harder on these guys.
And I think that's why Lavi's a good pick. I think I agree. I didn't love the Babcock idea going there, but I think Laviolette fits that mold of, he might still have a barrier. He might be that one head coach left that puts a barrier up and really gets everybody's attention. They're going to need a Rick Bowness type assistant coach to communicate there. But it's certainly a group that needs to be kept on the rails, and we've seen that. And when they are on the rails, they're tough to beat. But we've also seen them, like Kevin said, drift away from the process, and that'll be Laviolette's toughest task with this group and getting them on board right away.